I am speaking to you at a moment of grave crisis.
I'm Jeff Turner, and this is Recall. It's a series about history. Not the ancient past, but history that's still hot to the touch. In this first season, I explore a revolutionary political movement that brought a modern democracy to the brink. You can find Recall, How to Start a Revolution, on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Rosemary Barton.
And I'm El Amin Abdul-Mahmoud.
And this is Party Lines.
Quebec unveiled a pretty massive reopening plan this week, Rosie, and we are also watching so much of the U.S. reopen. I'm wondering, why are restrictions being lifted at different paces in different places? And will our governments be able to manage the patience of Canadians through all of this?
Indeed. But first, I want us to look at this conversation around sharing vaccines globally. It's happening because the WHO is urging richer countries like Canada and the US to send shots elsewhere before vaccinating their younger people, kids. So what's Canada's next move? Is the federal government willing and able to share our supply?
So much to get into, so let's do it.
All right. So on a week when we are getting the biggest shipment we've had so far, a vaccine, 4.5 million doses. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's more and more people getting vaccinated. These are all good things, right? These are all things that we all can agree are good things. It also means that the age limits are starting to widen out as well. So in Ontario this week, for instance, it's now anyone who's 18 and older can get vaccinated. And in some provinces, that has now gone all the way down to age 12, like in Alberta, for instance. So there's all sorts of young people who are clamoring for appointments and getting them. And this is all, of course, part of what we want, right? We want as many people as possible to be vaccinated against COVID to protect us all. But there is a conversation that's happening that is maybe a little more difficult to have, frankly, and it's being led by some major health organizations and development organizations in the world, like the World Health Organization and like UNICEF, who are now saying to countries like Canada and others like the United States, listen, you are doing very well in vaccinating your adult population and protecting the most vulnerable of your population who are susceptible to getting very ill and dying. And now is the time for you actually to start thinking about taking some of your supply or your supply that you will soon have and sending it to parts of the world where people are still dying at an unacceptable rate. Think of India, for instance, or think of the continent of Africa where vaccine is not happening, virtually not happening. And leaving some of the teenagers and younger children out of the mix for now in order to try and protect some of those poorer countries that are having a hard time containing the virus and having a hard time acquiring the vaccines. It's an interesting argument, but you can see why it might be difficult in this country for instance, parents to think about that. But at the same time, it's a little bit hard to defend how it might be viewed as being a bit selfish of us too, right? To not see that we don't want people in the world dying.
Yeah, I gotta say, you know, it made sense that during the start of the vaccination campaign, moral issues like this one were not up front and center. And maybe like I naively thought that we could like keep kicking this can further down the road. But we've clearly come to a point where we can't, or at least according to those global organizations that you mentioned, we can't. Because our producer Emma pulled these totally bonkers stats that, you know, more than 40% of the doses administered around the world, 1.4 billion doses administered around the world, and more than 40% of them have been in high-income countries that make up only 16% of the global population. But it gets even more acute when you get to the 29 lowest-income countries. They collectively have 9% of the world's population, but 0.3% of the population there have been vaccinated. So, you know, we get to this news story that happened earlier this week that, you know, NACI approved vaccines for children aged 12 to 15. And that presents us with one of those moral choices that, like, you normally only see in a philosophy textbook, I feel, like, not in real life, you know, where we, like, know that teenagers or children are getting COVID way less frequently. And I get it. Like, if we vaccinate 12 to 15 year olds now, we are in a stronger position to reopen. You know, you like, it's really easy to imagine high schools in the fall all full, all bustling and what have you. But it also means like that's really crucial supply that's not going to go to the countries where adults are dying, and that supply could help. And I don't think that's the only choice either. Like, we keep hearing from experts that places where the virus keeps circulating will end up putting us at a higher risk because the virus will keep circulating and then it has a higher chance of mutating. And then we get more and more variants and maybe raises the risk of a variant that we can't stop with the vaccines. Mm-hmm. And it's also important to know that, like, as much as I'd like to think of this as a theoretical conversation about like global haves and have nots, we were called out specifically, like this country was called out specifically saying you have this extra AstraZeneca supply. The vaccine's been paused in most of the country. So what do? We should donate it. That's sort of the argument that's been made. And now we have to say yes or no to that. Like, it is no longer in the theoretical realm.
No, and other countries are doing it. I mean, they're doing it in different circumstances. The United States, mm-hmm. which has a glut of supply in part because they are having a hard time convincing people to take the vaccine, but they have decided to donate 80 million doses by the end of next month. Now, some of that is, in fact, AstraZeneca, which still remains not approved in that country. But there's also Pfizer, Moderna, J&J, all kinds of other vaccines that they are donating to the world. France and Sweden have also donated through COVAX. That's the group under which countries can pay in to help vaccinate the world or can donate vaccine directly. And COVAX mm-hmm. then distributes it to developing countries. So those countries are doing it too. Now, Canada has given money to COVAX. It has also taken vaccine from COVAX. And we became, yes. we were criticized for that as well. But it's worth also pointing out that India, that maybe we are not talking enough about, but it reported a record 4,529 deaths yesterday. And cases are still rising by more than 250,000 a day. So, this is an extreme event in that country. It is disastrous for that population. And it has also caused a variant, to your point, right? And if India doesn't get a handle on this and the variant that has originated there starts to spin out, that then becomes a problem for us. It becomes a problem for the entire world. It's part of the reason why we suspended flights from India and Pakistan. So you can see why this might be something that organizations are calling for us to do. I think there's also, though, a recognition that when you are governing, your first responsibility is to your own citizens. So at what point does it morally or politically become acceptable to have that conversation? And I don't know the answer to that. I don't think we're there yet because we have so mm-hmm. few people who have had two doses.
Right.
Canada has said it will donate excess doses. It said it as early as December before we even had any coming into the country or a significant amount anyway. And then Minister Anita Anand, who's in charge of procurement, said it as recently as this past week that, yes, we're committed to donating excess doses. But we are not right now in a stage where we have excess doses. So it's unclear when that starts happening.
I mean, it's probably good to frame this in the context of COVAX because yes. COVAX was meant to prevent exactly this from happening. Like, the whole idea behind founding COVAX, and we were excited to be a part of COVAX, was that, okay, we're going to share vaccines globally to prevent too much of a split, because the vaccine is going to be needed equally across the globe, but certain countries will have more access to it. And that's exactly what's coming to pass. And the idea is that, like, here we are a nation that has access to all these vaccines, but in order to sort of buttress the earliest part of our vaccination campaign, we did draw from COVAX. So what is our responsibility to the world at this point? Because the picture that's emerging is, I guess, like a very familiar picture, which is that once high-income nations deal with a problem, it's like it no longer exists, you know? It's like no longer a reality that they have to contend with. One of the pieces of reporting that we read for this was from Vox, and Vox said that there are poorer countries that might not get vaccinated until 2023. Mm-hmm. That is such a long time if you consider that, you know, half the U.S. is already there now. But the notion that we can participate in making this inequality less sharp should be attractive. And I think is part of like the Canadian brand that we believe in when it comes to our global affairs. I don't know how true it is, but I think it's something that we like to believe about ourselves. So then what do we do? What do we do that is in accordance with our values, but also, like you said, actually like caters to the fact that not the whole country has had two doses so far. In fact, a very small number of people have had two doses in this country. Are we at a place where we're ready to share yet? I don't know. But it is like a moral decision we have to make, and the clock is kind of running out on it.
Yeah, it's also kind of, you know, it's difficult to watch, you know, like today in France, the day we're recording this, like patios and cafes are open in Paris again, and Emmanuel yes. Macron was out there having a coffee, and you know, you sit in your office and you think, oh, look at that, I'll be able to do that one day, isn't that so lovely? And then to realize that like there's a whole half of the world that is nowhere near that. And it's kind of, it's a little bit gross to consider, really. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with us having these expectations and wanting to plan our lives and have a beer on a patio. But it is difficult to reconcile in your mind, I think, that one thing can be happening without us aggressively moving on the other part. The other way that the world is looking at this is through the lens of patents, drug patents. So, you know, drug companies design a drug and they have a patent protection on it so that only they have sort of the recipe for the drug. This has now made its way to the WTO, the World Trade Organization, and President Biden has said, we support suspending patent protection for this vaccine. Canada is still in the position where it's considering it and is willing to discuss it at the WTO. The WTO works by consensus, so everyone sort of has to agree that this is the way to go. And that sounds like a great idea. Okay, well, let's just make sure that parts of the world can make their own generic Pfizer vaccine for COVID, except that it takes a long time to create the manufacturing capacity for a very complicated vaccine. It takes a lot to get the various ingredients that go into that vaccine. That's why there are supply issues around the world. And that's not going to be something that solves the problem overnight. Like, that's not going to help Africa in the short term. It might help them later on, but it's certainly not going to do anything now. So, like, it's great that that conversation is happening, but no one, I don't think anyone thinks that that is the only solution either. So we're sort of in this place where there's a bunch of things that we could be doing, whether it be donating more money, giving back vaccine, lifting the patent protection, but none of them are actually going to get any of those countries vaccinated at the same speed that we are being vaccinated.
Hi, I'm Damon Fairless, host of Hunting Warhead from CBC Podcasts and the Norwegian newspaper VG. Hunting Warhead follows a global team of police and journalists as they attempt to dismantle a massive network of predators on the dark web. Winner of the grand prize for best investigative reporting at the New York festivals and recommended by The Guardian, Vulture, and The Globe and Mail, you can find Hunting Warhead on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so we're going to talk about the U.S. in a minute, but I want to open by acknowledging that we are recording this a day after Barack Obama went on James Corden and was jokingly asked about aliens, Rosie.
Oh my God, this just came out. I just discussed this in my other show meeting.
Right, yeah. because his answer was, well, what is true is that there's footage and records of objects in the skies and we don't know exactly what they are. Yeah. And it's like, how is that not on the big wall of every news network? How are you not in studio right now being like, aliens? Possibly.
There might be UFOs. We may have been not telling you the truth for decades. Okay, what does this have to do with this podcast?
Nothing at all. Oh, okay. I just wanted to open with that because it just shook me a lot and I was bewildered and I'm still bewildered by the fact that I don't understand how you're not in the studio right now telling everyone that aliens are a maybe. It's no longer a no. It's like a maybe.
Well, we're here.
But anyway, that wasn't
on the
only...
Okay.
What's that?
They're hearing it on the podcast. It's
They're hearing it now.
Yeah.
Good. I'm relieved that they are. That wasn't the only bewildering thing that I watched this week.
Oh, good seg. Good seg.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. This is what we were building up to. But the segue is to the clip that you talked about earlier this week in our editorial meeting, which is that on Monday night, we watched a Nashville Predators and Carolina Hurricanes game that had a full arena. Like, just, it was like the olden days. Like, people's faces were pressed up against the glass. And it was so jarring. And I think maybe the reason that jarring is the word that works here is that late last week, the CDC in the U.S. shocked a lot of people by announcing that the U.S. can relax masking, except for in certain contexts, like maybe if you're like on an airplane. And then also this week, if the numbers hold, then on the day that people are hearing this podcast, Canada will match the U.S. in terms of adults who have their first dose, a little over 47%. And then we heard Quebec announce its reopening plan, which followed the Saskatchewan reopening plan that was released a couple of weeks ago. And Quebec expects the curfew that they have to lift by May 28th. And then by May 31st, most of Quebec will be a place where you can have indoor dining and gyms again. Schools are going to reopen. We should also say, like, Quebec vaccination campaign is on track. Like, more than half of adults have one dose. And if you count people who have an appointment to get that first dose, that number goes up to 75%. But I just think, like, seeing all the stories like that, you start to be tempted to maybe think that we're on the off-ramp from this thing. And that in and of itself, I think, is a little bit jarring and raises a million questions. But I want to start with, like, a vibe check, because are you as shook as I am?
About the UFOs, 100%.
Thank you. Thank you.
I don't think President Obama was even allowed to say that, but that was probably one of those top secret things that he said.
Yeah, I agree.
But on the other matter, yes, I am. You know, I follow probably too many celebrities who live in New York on Instagram, and they're just all walking around without their masks and sitting outside and having dinners and living, you know, a pretty normal life. And while I welcome that, that is indeed what we are all working towards, it does seem like it has happened suddenly in the United States. It also seems like it has happened at a different pace than what we will see. And I say that for two reasons. So you mentioned that we're going to outpace them for one dose soon. That's right. Maybe we already have by the time you hear this. But we are not outpacing them for two doses, although that may also happen at some point, because as we've talked about, there's more reluctance in the U.S. to take the vaccine. But right now, as we're recording this, about 37%, let's say 40% of Americans have two doses. In Canada, it's about 4%.
Yeah.
But the fact that the CDC and the administration would say, with 40%, if you are fully vaccinated, you can take off your masks, to me is surprising. It's surprising. So yes, if you've been fully vaccinated, you are at a very minute risk of getting ill. But that doesn't mean that you couldn't be carrying something, and that doesn't mean that you couldn't infect someone else. In Canada, the bars that we have set for reopening and returning to normal life are much different. We got a first glimpse of that last week when Dr. Theresa Tam and the Prime Minister said, when we have 75% of the population with one dose, we can start doing things like eating on patios, you know, maybe having a backyard barbecue with some people, that kind of thing. But it's not until we have 75% with two doses that we can actually start doing those other things, like going inside. That's where that whole line, one dose summer, two dose fall, came from.
yes.
Like it or hate it. That's where it's from. So obviously the bar is really different. And I think that too is a little, I don't know. Should I be worried that we are going too slowly? Should I be worried that they are going too fast? The UK, too, has about 30% of its population fully vaccinated. They are also back in pubs, socializing. They're doing a lot of stuff, too, that doesn't really seem to be on the radar yet for us.
Okay. I want to talk about that one dose summer, two dose fall phrase. Because it was a phrase that was said by the Prime Minister, and it sort of tanked. Like, it was not received very well. On social media, people made fun of it. I saw the provinces weren't particularly happy. Like Saskatchewan premier said, actually, no, we're going to ship these doses out as fast as we can. We're not going to do this one dose summer, two dose fall thing. And I guess we should say that the point of the phrase was to get at this idea that some restrictions are going to be lifted while we have the first dose. Like you mentioned, the patios or the backyards and so on. And by the fall, most people will have their second dose. So then we're really off to the races. But as Stephanie Levitz reported out in the Starlink, the phrase one dose summer was invented by the prime minister himself. That's according to his office. And like, there is absolutely no force on earth that can convince me that he was not trying to play off like a hot girl summer from Megan Thee Stallion. Is that speculation? Sure. Does my heart believe it? Unquestionably. But the larger point, I think, is that it's fair to read that whole episode and watch the stuff that's unfolding in the U.S. and feel frustrated. Yeah. Because if we're indeed about to be as vaxxed as the U.S. when it comes to doses, then I think it's fair to say, well, why are our decisions that different? Why are we not graduating from like this idea of one dose summer to like a full, I don't know, fun summer, like an actual hot girl summer? Like, why is our threshold so high? I don't have any good answers to this, but I suspect that one coming crisis of pandemic communication is going to be about managing the patience of Canadians as we watch all of these things happen.
Yeah, I would say a couple things. I would first of all say I didn't think the phrase was that bad. I thought it was misunderstood. I also do not think that the prime minister has a clue who Nicki Minaj and Megan Thee Stallion is, all right? I just don't.
You really don't think so?
No, I really don't think it was about that. Emma had to explain it to me. And I'm just a couple years younger than him. But I also think that there are places in the U.S. where they are being slightly more cautious. California says you still have to wear a mask. The Gap says you still have to wear a mask when you want to go in, and other places like in Minnesota, for instance, the mask mandate remains in the city of Minneapolis, but not across the whole state. A lot of this confusion and maybe it's not even confusion, but a lot of the differences, I think, are going to come for the same reason that we have had complications throughout the pandemic, and that is that we're in a federation. And provinces really have to lay out how they want things to unroll in their own regions. And so the federal government can signal through the public health agency, here's the sort of metrics we're looking at. In fact, Dr. Tam has said the masks will be like one of the last things to go for us. But and we started using them far ahead of the United States and had much more broad acceptance of them, too. But I also think it's going to be up to provinces to sort of lay out, as Quebec did this week, as Ontario has suggested it's going to do soon, as Saskatchewan has done, to say this is what things are going to start looking like moving forward because it falls within their jurisdiction. So it's, you know, frustrating maybe to watch the pace at which things are unfurling in the U.S. But I think in some ways it does make sense that we don't have it all sorted yet. And I mean, listen, if I can just go have like a hot dog or a veggie dog in my best friend's backyard, like that's going to be fine for me. That will be my hot girl summer.
Don't get me wrong, okay? First of all, that sounds amazing. I want this for you. I want this for all of us. But I do think that comparison is going to get harder and harder as we see more of these videos of concerts returning and like full arenas of sports games that are being played. It's going to get harder and harder to convince Canadians that a one dose is not enough. Like if we get to that 75% threshold, even if we don't necessarily reach the 20% threshold of second doses that Theresa Tam is talking about, it's going to be hard to convince people that the restrictions should remain in place. And I guess that's the part that I'm thinking ahead about, because maybe isolation happens in a vacuum, but like all of this sort of lifting of restriction does not. And we're all kind of watching other countries to see what they do. And if Canadians feel that we are behind when it comes to our metrics because we are just as vaccinated as somewhere else or more vaccinated than another place, then it's going to be more and more difficult to convince people that they just have to stay home. And I don't know like the health consequences of this, but I do know that it's like going to be a politics nightmare.
That's the sound of people clinking beer bottles across the river in Gatineau. about a week from now. I'm not going to illegally drive over there, in case you were going to ask. I'm not.
I wasn't.
No,
I was
going
to leave that up to you and your morality.
No, the police are there anyway, so I would get caught. It's also, I wouldn't do it. It's also the sound of last call. And last week we asked, do you feel more border restrictions are necessary at this point in the pandemic?
We heard from a lot of people on this one. One person said, border measures are sufficient. Community control, like quarantine and lockdown, matters much more. Vietnam had a strong border control in December. An entire university of 23,000 students shut down temporarily because of one case.
Wow.
Another listener tweeted, I'd love provincial border restrictions. The idea of being ticketed for a Saskatchewan license plate in Alberta scares my in-laws more than COVID. Whatever works. Amazing.
What does that say about the in-laws? I don't know.
I love it. I love it. I love it.
Here's another one. This person said, hearing about how Ontario Premier Doug Ford wants tighter border restrictions on party lines is hilarious to me as a Newfoundlander living in Nova Scotia who hasn't seen their family since December 2019 because interprovincial travel in Atlantic Canada is so hard right now. I also haven't seen my family since 2019, for the record.
I know. That's been such a hard part of this whole thing.
Yeah.
And one last one to share. This listener wrote, so good to hear you discussing border restrictions, international and domestic. It would be great if the federal and or provincial politicians would give us some hope. Will a one-dose summer allow us to visit our family in other provinces, especially in Atlantic Canada? Mm. That would be a good one to clarify, actually. That's good to know.
Yeah, it would. This week, we want to ask you about the first topic we were chatting about. Do you want to see Canada share its vaccines with countries in need before vaccinating younger people here at home? I'm sure you'll all have strong opinions about that. So tweet us. I'm at Rosie Barton.
And I'm at Elamine88. And throw in the hashtag. The hashtag is Party Lines. And let us know what you think.
That's it for Party Lines this week. From CBC News and CBC Podcasts, I am Rosemary Barton, Chief Political Correspondent for CBC News.
And I'm Elamine Abdul Mahmoud, Chief, I don't know, Alien Research Officer and Culture Writer for BuzzFeed News.
And a hot girl all the time.
That's right. That's right. You know it.
See you back here next week.
You bet.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.